Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow, I'm such a face.
Such a face, May.
So many people come into Makati. It's a very business district. People are working, call centers here and there. But I never really wanted the 9-to-5. I'm happier during the night. Whenever I'm here, I fight inside the squared circle.
Game. First match, tag team match, Super Nintendo and AB3, the end game, okay? Versus the Reunited Pump Dolls. Yeah. The main event goes for 15 to 18 minutes. Jake De Leon versus Crystal.
I like having intergender matches because I can show that, oh, Crystal can fight. And she can go toe-to-toe with another guy. Tonight, I'm going to be facing Jake De Leon, who is like, you know, Mr. Philippine Wrestling.
It's like the transformation somehow. You know, 5 minutes ago, I was Vernice. And now just putting on the glitter, the makeup, the eyelashes, I'm slowly turning into Crystal, the fierce, feisty, basically Vernice, but times 50.
Being the first woman to wrestle in PWR was very difficult because there were so many, you know, stereotypes. You don't see a lot of women who can stand up for themselves. I'm actually quite nervous for tonight because it's going to be the second time my mom is going to be seeing me wrestle. My mom had such a difficulty accepting that I'm going to be wrestling. She was like, Bernice, I don't like this. You look like you're beaten up. So tonight, I just want to do a good job. Mom, this is what makes me happy.
I'm very proud of you. You're very good. But I was really scared. Second time. I don't know when the third time will be.
Don't cry. Don't cry.
I'm good.
Crystal, how are we doing?
I am doing great, thank you, Tom. It's, you know, it's quite hot in the Philippines, but, you know, nothing I can't handle.
What's the temperature currently in the Philippines, dare I ask?
Oh, my goodness. Let me check the... I don't even want to know, honestly. I think you'd be, like, surprised because to us, it's normal. It is 34 degrees Celsius.
34 degrees Celsius. So, you know what? We'll do the very British thing and talk about the weather to start. Because over here, it is currently, where I'm currently sat, it is 4 degrees Celsius. So, somewhere in the middle 34. would be much better if we could find somewhere in the middle. We catch you on a really exciting day because, as we were talking before we started recording, you've just passed a really important Japanese exam.
Yeah, I passed my JL. Well, it's like it's a mock exam because like it's for just the passing of the course. But I, you know, if I do want to take the national like language test, the JLPT, I can probably like, you know, go through it really easily because like I went through like, you know, a year and a half basically of learning Japanese. Just cause. But yeah, now I'm on like middle school level Japanese.
That's amazing. So yeah. So I mean, from here then, how many more levels are there to go?
N3, N2, N1. Mm. Well, you don't necessarily have to get to N1 because that's like, you know, like if you want to be like a scholar or a diplomat, that's, you know, what to do. But if you want to get to N2, you can probably like be able to get to like teaching jobs or maybe like, you know, assisting jobs. But yeah, I really want to get to N3 for sure. Maybe N2, but you know, we'll see if my brain can still handle it.
What's been the trickiest part about learning Japanese?
Honestly, the conjugations. Because you know how in English we conjugate like
verbs.
You know, verbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to them, they can conjugate anything. Well, not anything, but they have ways to conjugate even nouns, adverbs, adjectives, verbs. So, like, there's, like, tricky ways, like, within their language. Also, like, the same, like, some of the same words, like, they're spelled the same, but, like, they mean different things.
Right, and it's a case of when you see it written down, it's going, okay, does it mean this or does it mean that?
Yeah.
Thinking about the context all the time.
But then that's when the kanji comes in. The kanji is where, like, the, you know, the traditional Chinese comes in. So, like, for example, there's this verb, it's tatsu, which it either means, like, to stand up or to let time pass through.
Okay.
To let time pass. So, like, it depends on what character, like what, you know, G or like character or like Chinese symbol you're going to use. And then that's when the, you know, how you can differentiate the meaning of it. So I'm just like, what is this word? Most of the time. Also, basically like learning three alphabets in one go, that's like really difficult.
Yeah, it's tough enough learning one in a whole new language, but then having to learn three side by side as well. What's the hope that once you've done it? I mean, you say you've done it, you've kind of done it for fun, but is there other reasons why you're learning Japanese as well?
To go to Japan?
Yeah, that makes sense, wouldn't it? That would make sense.
Well, to be honest, like ever since I was a kid, I've always loved like the Japanese like culture. Like I started learning like how to use the chopsticks since I was like 6 years old. Because like when I was a kid, my mom bought me these like tiny books that would be like, you know, little encyclopedias, like more like kid-friendly encyclopedias about like different countries. Like I had one for like America, Australia, I had one for Britain, I think, and I had one for like Japan, like other countries as well. And then like, you know, it's fun facts, like, you know, in Australia they have like these oatmeal cookies, like kangaroos, all that. And then my favorite one was like Japan, because like they had like chopsticks, origami, sakura, all the, you know, all the touristy stuff. But then I was so obsessed, and then, you know, I couldn't let go. So that growing up, I just kept watching anime, I kept reading manga, and then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do this legit, like I'm gonna learn Japanese. Also because like it's not like, it's a happy coincidence that I love Japan, and like wrestling culture in Japan is big.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, hopefully, you know, having like a leg up, being able to talk Japanese or like read and write Japanese would, you know, maybe, you know, garner me some bookings over there, or maybe, you know, let me go back, because I have been to Japan before. I had like a, you know, mini Japanese tour, but I want that Japanese tour to be like, you know, a longer stay next time.
I want to get into that, and I want to get into to everything else about you, because I know there'll be people that maybe be hearing from you for the very first time. Like for me, it was a couple of days ago from when we sat down to record. I watched on Netflix Midnight Asia, and and so we get to the Manila episode, and my spider sense goes off. Because I see a wrestling ring and I see you sat in a wrestling ring. I'm going, oh, there's wrestling in this one. Brilliant. and there you were. And we got to hear your story. And I was like, this is a story that needs to be told more. And that's why we're here. But we're going to get into it. But we're going to get there in a on a journey. So we're going to take a journey to
a
desert island, a metaphorical desert island. And on that island, you'll be allowed to watch three wrestling matches that have some special significance to you. And we're going to talk about which ones you're picking one by one throughout the interview today. So I'd like to know, Krista, what your first wrestling match would be, please.
It's me versus my wrestling matches, right?
They can be your wrestling matches, or they can be matches that you love watching as a fan. So it's either or.
Well, I think my first match, that means like the most significant to me, like would be my match with Emi Sakura.
Wow, that's a good shout, because Emi Sakura is a
is
wrestling royalty.
Yeah.
So
it was actually so surprising that I was going to face Sakura-san here in the Philippines, because we had like Maza-san and I'm not sure who the other one is, but like Maza-san was coming here to the Philippines and like he told us like via LINE, like the messenger app, he was like, also Sakura-san's coming with us, who can she have a match with? So like I already had like a big match planned, like there was like a big tournament, like Royal Rumble type of thing. And then they pulled me out of the tournament. Basically, I felt bad because like I've already planned some, you know, stuff with the guys. And then like they pulled me out last minute, and then I'm facing Sakura-san. Like this all happened within like a few days, like, you know, like less than a week. And I was just like, I'm not mentally prepared for this. I'm facing Sakura-san. Give me a second. I'm just like, you know, this, you know, legend and me, and I'm just like, my heart would be like pounding, like, you know, I feel like it was going to jump out of my chest anytime soon. But yeah, I faced Sakura-san. I think it was more touching because when the match finished, everyone gave us like a standing ovation. And like, I wasn't like going to retire or anything, but they were like chanting, "Thank you, Crystal."
Oh.
And I was just like, oh my god, okay, so that match really did something. And like I was really nervous about that match, and like after it happened, everyone was just like, you know, they were just like cheering, and it was a magical moment.
And that must have said something to Emi Sakura or Sakura-san, that when, you know, you two are in the ring together, you've had your match and the crowd are all chanting for you, like that. With when it comes to wrestling someone like that, somebody who's been everywhere, do you think, you said that you only had a couple of days to process it, do you think had you known like months in advance that you might have sort of overanalyzed it, do you think?
Yeah, I probably would have, like I probably would have, like, you know, been too anxious to even try to do anything. I would just be like probably like stuck in the gym, like, you know, pumping it out almost every day, and I'm just like, this is Sakura-san, I'm facing Sakura-san, I can't mess this up. So but I'm happy that it, you know, I only knew like a few days before, but like it was like such a rush that I couldn't exactly like overthink. Cause like I'm an overthinker, so I feel like if I knew like a month before, I would be like, I can do this, I can do that. But what if like Sakura-san doesn't like it? Like what if I mess up? Blah, 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 blah. You know, like the anxious overthinking thing. Mm. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm actually grateful that I only knew like a like it was only like decided a couple days before the match itself.
What did you two talk about as well, away from the match itself? What did you guys chat about backstage?
Mean Sakura-san? Mm.
Did you get much time to talk?
Yeah, actually, it would be like just basic stuff. Also, because I think before this event, like before Sakura-san like flying out, I've already met her in Thailand like once or twice.
Hmm.
I've joined her training, you know, a couple of times, and then, out of the blue, just like, you know, just not trying to like promote myself or anything, I told her that like
that's what you're here for. Dream... It's fine.
No. But like to Sakura-san, like, I didn't want to like, you know, just like push myself onto her. But I was just like, it was like they're going away dinner, because like they were gonna leave like the following morning. So me and a couple of guys from the company decided that we'll take them out for dinner, you know, a nice, you know, Filipino restaurant, so they could get some food. And I told Sakura that my dream has always been to go to Japan when I was a kid. And then she was surprised because she was like, "What? Really? Really?" And then she talked to Maza-san from DDT, who was with her on the trip. They were talking Japanese, and at the time I couldn't understand a thing. And she was like, "Crystal, you should come to Japan. I invite you." And I was just like, that was like a shot, like a very, you know, long shot. And I was just like, "Oh, right." Okay. I had to like prepare three separate visas because I had to prepare one for China, Shanghai, China. Yeah. And then I had to prepare another one for like, you know, my booking in China. And then I had to prepare for the Japan one. So I was just like, you know, for a few months, I was just, like running around getting all my visa papers. And I was just like, wow. Wow, I'm so tired. And then this would also be the time that I would also get bookings on the side. Like this would be like, okay, let me put it as a timeline. I faced Sakura-san in March. And then I went to the thing is, here in the Philippines, for PWR at least, we have like a match every month, like a show every month. Well, before the pandemic. So I don't know what's gonna happen now. So one show every month. This was like my timeline of 2019, which was like the craziest, most busy year for me. Because like after the Sakura-san match, this is why like this match is so important for me, because like it started. Like that's where it began to pick up. I had like a match in Singapore, and then I had the match in like here. And then I was at the same month, I was preparing for my WWE tryout, which was nerve wracking.
Yeah.
And that's like another story to talk about. It was hell in a week, basically. And then I had like a, you know, month off to work on two visas. But then that same month, I also had a match. And then I went to like China for Middle Kingdom Wrestling. And then that's when Sakura-san's invite came in. Well, she's invited me like a few months prior, but then that's when I flew out. So this would be like September of 2019.
Okay.
And then like, you know, a couple of like, you know, other bookings here and there. I also went to, I believe I went to like China thrice that year.
Right, you had a busy time of it. And I think when all these things are happening at once, a bit like the fact that with the Sakura-san match, that you didn't have time to process it and overthink it. You had all this stuff happening at the same time, so you didn't really have time to overthink it. You just had to go and do it. Yeah, I've got three matches on three different countries. Yes, I've got a WWE tryout. Yes, I've got potentially some work with DDT. I've got all this to think about. I don't have time to worry about it. I've just got to do it.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I was so thankful because I got those opportunities. Not just because of Sakura-san. It's probably because, like, you know, years of hard work and cultivation. But I honestly believe that they do say here in the Philippines, like, that my match with Sakura-san would be probably, like, the best like, women's wrestling match in the Philippines so far. And I'm, like, really thankful of that because it's such a big honor, because I am, like, the first, like, female wrestler in like modern day Philippines, modern day like Philippine wrestling. So yeah,
it's an incredible achievement, and that was a big part of the focus of your story on Midnight Asia on Netflix.
Yeah,
was the fact that you were this trailblazing performer in the Philippines. Where did it all start for you as a to get into the world of wrestling? So I know you mentioned that your grandma was a big influence on your love for wrestling.
My grandma used to love wrestling. She used to have like the biggest crush on Bret Hart. Like because I don't really remember much at the time, but like this is like some of the memories that my mom told me about. I like whenever, you know, Bret Hart like enters the ring, like enters, like, you know, gets out of the curtain, like enters and like walks down, my grandma would be like squealing, like, you know, and she's like, so handsome, you know. You know, with his strut and stuff, and you just, she's like just like freaking out, and she had like the biggest crush on him. And of course she also liked the Undertaker. I mean, but then, oh, I like or hate, I'm not sure about that one. Because, you know, that was the time that, like, Undertaker was, like, unbeatable. And, like, he was this, like, big heel. And, but, yeah.
But she loved Bret Hart,
though.
A lot of love for Bret Hart.
Yeah, a lot of love. It's not even funny. Like, I don't think my mom ever mentioned, like, any other wrestler name before. Because, like, my mom isn't really, like, a big fan of wrestling. Because there was, like, a time that she only saw it, like, as violence, not as, like, a, you know, sports entertainment, not plus as an art. But yeah, my grandma probably just loved Bret Hart that much that, you know, my mom only remembers that wrestler's name.
So even though your mom wasn't into it, your grandma got you into wrestling.
Yeah.
Who were some of those wrestlers early on that you saw that you personally really latched onto?
I mean, there would be like the basic answers, like, you know, Trish and Lita. But I think like the biggest, like my favorite of all time would be Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm growing up, you know, there's always like, you know, school bullies and stuff like that. And like when I was younger, I would get bullied a lot. Because I used to be in like the swim team, like I used to go like swimming training every day, not every day, like every week. So like I would really have like, you know, tan skin. Like also you'll see like suntan scars because of my, you know, swimming gear or swimming training. It's like I would have like, you know, my arms would be like hella dark, and then like my torso would be like this color of my skin. And then I would always get bullied, like I'm you know, I'm too dark, or I have too big eyes. Like I used to get bullied a lot when I was a kid. But when I, because okay, the thing is, I forgot about wrestling when I was a kid for a bit, because, you know, you're a kid, you know, there's cartoons and anime. So then when I got back into it, that was the time that I was getting bullied in school. And I was like, this was like late elementary to like early high school for me. I'd get bullied. I would get stuff like that. And then this was a time where I think Batista and Rey Mysterio was like having a feud.
I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that was the time that I just like freaked out, because like this tiny guy, I know like Ray isn't tiny, but like compared to Batista, he's tiny. But this small guy standing up to what to me seemed like such a big bully to him, like not even just like a big bully, like even like height wise big bully. And that was like, to me, yeah, I need, yeah, I'm gonna follow this guy. If he can stand up to his bullies, I can stand up to my bullies. So that's why like Rey Mysterio is always like a big influence on me, not even just like wrestling wise, you know, because his technique has been like perfected throughout the years, but like just what he stood for at that time. And what I loved is that he didn't try to match power with power, because, you know, that's not physically possible because he's not a big wrestler, but he was smart about it. He would like fly around the ring, use momentum. And that's what I do now, because I face men and women at the same time, and most of them are taller than me. So,
did Rey Mysterio help change your attitude towards bullies? Was there any confrontation that you had with bullies, sort of as the Rey Mysterio influence was setting in? Was there any situations that you can remember where you got picked on and you stood up to them? You kind of empowered Rey Mysterio?
It was during like I was sent to the principal's office for this, honestly. It was just the first and only time that I was sent to the principal's office for like discipline. There was this one girl who just kept, you know, pushing my buttons every single day. Like she would be like, like, you know, every day, like blah 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 blah. All the you know, teasing and bullying. And like it was the time that we were gonna watch a movie for like English class, and then she wouldn't stop talking to me. And she sat, like I sat in the front row just because like I didn't wanna, you know, bother anyone. Also, I'm small, so like, you know, if I sat in the back row, I wouldn't be able to see. I would just be seeing the backs of people's heads. So she was just like, I'm trying to focus on the movie, right? Because I know that, you know, our teacher is going to probably be like, you're going to have to write like a reflection on this, you know, you're going to have to write a paper on this. And that classmate of mine just kept like, imagine this is me, she just here, like kept yapping and yapping at me. And she was like playing with my hair, like playing with whatever with me. And I was just like, I snapped. I feel like it's like, you know, it's like a comeback in my head now that I'm thinking about it. Like, I feel like I snapped and I turned to her and I just like gave her like a whack on the back of her head. Like a big, big old whack. And then she stopped. And then all my classmates looked at me just like, whoa. I didn't look like this. I was like a wrestler back then. I did have like Taekwondo background back then. But like I never laid a finger on any of my bullies just because I don't want to get to, you know, sent to the principal's office or whatever. But then I couldn't take it anymore. And I was just like,
wow. So what did the principal say?
She let me go.
Yeah. Did the principal know that this one was a bit of a wrong one?
Yeah. She said like, you know, just don't do it again in the future. If she does, you know, bother you again, go to the counselor.
Yeah. But that's the.
And then she didn't bother me again.
No.
So she knew. I knew. I know how to fight. Also, I think the following month after that incident, I won like a Taekwondo tournament. So she was just like, oh.
So you weren't to be messed with. She went, oh, I got a sample. I'd rather not get the full thing. I'm accepting of that. By the way, if you are listening to this and you're listening to Crystal's story and you're having issues with bullies, we don't encourage you to punch them all the time. It's isolated cases. Take it case at a time. Always speak to an adult. I just think just good to chuck that in there just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Yeah, I you know, don't follow my footsteps.
Don't go. Crystal told me to. Just punching everybody on the way home. Crystal said it was fine.
No, kids, don't do it.
Crystal said it was fine. No, but moving away from that, then, so you've got this Taekwondo background, so there's already like this love for combat in there as well. Had wrestling not come along, what do you think you would have explored instead of wrestling?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, wow.
Was there anything else on in your horizon, in your world that you loved doing that you would have done instead?
I took up music in college. I didn't finish, but I took up a bit of music in college. Like I was going music business management major in sound production and performance. That was my degree in college. That was what I was taking. So if ever I didn't go into wrestling, I probably would have finished that, you know, maybe, you know, be a sound producer, like a producer or like a performer. But I probably would have had a sport either way. Like, even if it's like not a competitive thing or like maybe just like a casual thing, I probably would have had a sport. Because ever since I was a kid, like, say, I think I started sports when I was like 5. I had 1 year that I did ballet, but then that didn't stick. And then after I did ballet, that's when I did swimming. So I did like swimming for like 6 years or five or 6 years. And then like my last year of swimming, that's when I started Taekwondo simultaneously at the same time. So then after that, I had like 7 years of Taekwondo. And then like my last year of Taekwondo, I couldn't anymore because I sprained my ankle. Something about the bones that were supposed to be like, you know, close together, they never healed properly because of all the sprains that I've accumulated in Taekwondo. So I had to stop Taekwondo because my ankle couldn't take it anymore.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then this is the time that I entered college. So when I entered college, I did like a bit of cheerleading. And then third year to college, I did wrestling. So like I've had like sports my entire life. So if I didn't do wrestling, I probably would have stuck onto like maybe dancing or maybe I don't know.
But what's
some kind of other thing.
What's funny is that all the things that you did before you got into doing wrestling at college kind of led you to that path anyway, because as you say, yeah, you were doing music and you wanted to be a performer, and that's a big element of it. You did ballet, and there's an element of that in there as well. Taekwondo, so you got like a legit striking background until your injury as well. So all of these things kind of start,
and cheerleading
to, and cheerleading as well, so that's again a big part of sort of the wrestling package, that the personality, the charisma, the energy, the crowd engagement, all of these things kind of fell into place. And then
yeah.
Here's something that you can do all of those things with at the same time. And it's something that your grandma likes, and get into it. Was there much of a take up for wrestling at college level where you were? Because I'm intrigued. One thing I really want to talk about is sort of the scene as you were growing up as well, like how big it was, how much there was, where the influences were and such like that. So when you were at college level, how much interest was there of wrestling?
I was just like a fan of wrestling at that point. Guess there would be times that I would watch wrestling, and then a couple of years pass by, I wouldn't watch wrestling. And this was at the time that The Shield was a big thing.
Right.
And like me and some of my college friends would be like watching WWE on the weekly. Because if it's Monday Night Raw there, it's like Tuesday here.
Yeah.
So like we don't have like a Tuesday class together. So like me and my guy friends, because I didn't know any girls that would watch wrestling at the time with me. So every Wednesday class, after like our class, we would go to the cafeteria and just like geek out about Monday Night Raw. And they're like, oh my God, did you see Seth Rollins? Oh my God, a chair. And we would do that. And then we found out that this was around 2013. So we found out that there's like a couple of guys that started like a wrestling promotion here in the Philippines. I mean, there was like a wrestling promotion in the Philippines back in the 80s, but then that died out. And then they were making a new promotion called Philippine Wrestling Revolution. They already have some guys in, but you know, they're welcoming other people or like trainees. And then that's when we all, like through me and my friends, like they were two guys and me. So like all the three of us decided that we'll audition for PWR, Philippine Wrestling Revolution. And then that's where it started. We all got in, but I was the one that pushed through and they just did it.
What do you think made you stand out over your friends that also applied for it?
They got in as well, but they didn't really show up to training.
Right.
Because I don't know if they were like too busy or not decisive enough that they're gonna start it, but yeah. I still remember my audition tape. I clearly said, like, because they said, like, hey, state your name, your age, your athletic background, and why, give us a reason why we should accept you. I said, like, hey, my name is Crystal. I am 21. I think I was 21 or like 20 at the time. I'm 20. I did taekwondo and cheerleading, and you should accept me because I'm a girl.
Excellent argument at the end, I think.
That's exactly what I said, and I got in.
Nice. Because there just wasn't any other girls on the course, I'm taking it.
There was, like, other girls, but actually, there was another girl. She was also training at the same... There were, like... Okay, so, like, at the start, there were four of us girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them... I think got injured, and then the two of them, like the other two, their parents were against it.
Right.
Because, you know, big Christian country here, Philippines. So also for them, like, you know, a girl being up in a stage, like with showy outfits, or not even showy outfits, just like fighting men would be cliche. So not cliche, just not, it's unorthodox
would be the that's it. I mean, your mum, like, was featured heavily in Midnight Asia, watching, like, through her hands as you compete. When I take it that when you got into it, when you went, I'm starting the wrestling training, they've accepted me, she wasn't a fan of the idea.
No,
was she?
She wasn't at all.
No.
Let's make it a bit like more personal. Before starting wrestling, I was suffering through major depressive disorder.
Uh-huh.
So I had like major depression. Like I couldn't find anything that would excite me, or like, you know, I would pick up on, like, nothing. I was just living day by day, just, you know, I wasn't motivated about anything. And then I started, my friends were like, hey, let's join wrestling. And then we joined, and then I started. And for some reason, like, the more I kept going, the more stable I became. And then, like, I was starting to train, and, like, I didn't, like, you know, like, when you're so new at training, your body hurts everywhere.
Mm.
And you're just like, ow, I can't get up. Why is going to the toilet difficult? No, because, like, when your legs are on fire, like, imagine, like, leg pain, you're going to have to squat to the toilet. And you're just like, ow! That was me. Because I was, like, starting out. Also, my muscles were built differently. Like, I used to be, like, a cheerleader. And did taekwondo. I had like all the lower body strength, you know. My arms and my back were like, there's no muscle at all, but like there's like minimal muscle, because taekwondo is like very heavily based on kicks. So like I had the thighs, like the, you know, leg muscles for it, but like no upper body, no back muscle or anything like that. And then, you know, but then like when you're wrestling, you're landing, you're doing a lot of bumps, and you're just like doing this, and you're just like, ow. So, you know, I was suffering through depression. I was always overthinking, anxious all the time. And then when I started wrestling, like, also I think because, like, you know, exercise gives you like the happy hormones, endorphins.
Yeah, endorphins, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. And then I just started being more active, and I started getting better. I started being happier this time around. Also, I didn't have time to overthink anything because my body was in pain, you know. I was just like laying in bed and trying to find like a, you know, good sleeping position. And then once I do, I fall asleep, because normally, like, because of my depression at the time, I would just be like, you know, staring at my ceiling waiting for sleep to come. But when I started wrestling, I would just be like, oh.
And there's something to be said as well. I mean, with with depressive disorders, it's not just about, oh, you know, you're tired, you're hungry, whatever. It's not that. There's more to it. Mm. But a big part of it in coming out the other side of it is sleep and sleeping well. And it's almost like you tired yourself out and therefore you made yourself sleep. And that was probably discovering something that you were passionate about again is part of that story.
Yeah.
May I ask, you mentioned that obviously before you discovered wrestling, you were going through major depressive orders. And do you say that feeling of every day sort of going through the motions, as it were, and not really... Were you aware that you were doing that? If you know what I mean. Were you aware that you weren't aware?
If you see what I mean. Was aware that I felt like a bit of me felt like I was wasting my youth.
Mm.
Because there wasn't anything that I wanted to do. There wasn't anything that, even though that was enticing enough to make into a thing. I was just going through college. I was having a hard time. I had depression. And then I finally found wrestling. Although my mom was very against it, this is why I mentioned it a while ago, is because she saw how better I was becoming because of wrestling. Like, I was finally, like, going outside. I was finally making, like, meeting new people. I was finally doing stuff. Like, I finally had, like, a smile on my face sometimes. Like, I used to, apparently to her, I used to, like, look, like, haunting. Like, I would just be, like, stern, stone face, and I'm just, like this. And when the wrestling kept going, she would be like, "You look so... You look like you're enjoying yourself. You look like you're having the time of your life. You look so happy." And that's why, even though she still doesn't like it until this day, she supports it because it's what pulled me out of that dark place.
She can't deny the joy that it brings you.
Yeah.
And that's really lovely. So
she didn't stop me, and she just kept me going. She let me go, and the way she... supports me nowadays, even though she's still against it, she buys me, like, which I'm very thankful for, she buys me, like, knee pads and, like, elbow pads, all the pads that I need. And back before COVID, she would buy me, like, gym memberships. I mean, I can buy gym memberships on my own, but like, you know, I probably wouldn't go sometimes if I didn't have money. When she was like, "Here's a gym membership. Go build your body," and I'm just like, "Oh,
this is her way." It's her way of being involved, and also because she doesn't like it because she's very protective of you. And we saw that in the documentary. So I love the fact that she supports you by going, "Right, I'm gonna go buy you elbow pads, shin pads, protective gear." I can picture your mom, like, in a sports shop going, "These knee pads are only 3 times thick. These are 4 times. We'll get those ones. Get the thickest ones possible." Right, this gym membership so she can work on her body so she doesn't hurt herself when she falls down. That's, like, I love that that's your mum's way of saying, "Look, I don't approve of it, but this is how I can protect you. Knee pads, elbow pads, shin pads.
All the pads.
All the pads all the time."
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, let's do your second match. We've only done one so far. And first one was yourself and Amy Sakura. What would you like your second one to be, Crystal?
Wow. Honestly, I think that would be like Bailey, Sasha. The NXT, I'm not sure the name.
Would it be TakeOver Brooklyn, which was their first one? And then they did...
Yeah, I think that's one with the Frankensteiner, right?
It is, yes. They did the TakeOver Brooklyn one, where it just everybody was just blown away by how incredible that match was. It was match of the night. And then the following month, because it was so well received, they did the Iron Woman match, which was the main event of the evening. It was the first time that a women's title match had main evented an NXT WWE event of that caliber. But are we going for the Brooklyn one?
The Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, at the time, because before that, right? Like all the women would just be like 5 minute matches.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Sasha and Bailey just proved it. That this is what women are capable of. This is what you guys can get if you just give them the time.
It felt like a real
match.
Like a real match. It sounds really daft to say that, but it's true because, as you say, so many were sort of like 5 minute interlude matches, and you know, whenever you know, you say how like Trish Stratus and Lita were, you know, people that you admired when you were coming through as a wrestler, and they did so much with so little as well. In that sense, what is it? So, is there a moment from that match that the Bailey and Sasha match that stands out to you? I know we mentioned the Frankensteiner.
Oh, the Frankensteiner.
It's just a great bit.
Because you know, it's just such an exclamation point in that match, and you just see like Sasha just dying, you know, and you're just like, ah.
They're great. They work so well. Where were you when you watched that for the first time? Can you remember where you were?
Wow, I think I was here. I was already here at like home. I think I was just on my phone, YouTube. Mm. And I I'm not sure. Was it like a viewing party? There might have been like a viewing party where like people, like, you know, someone had like a WWE thing and then we watched together. And then we were just all freaking out. I just remember freaking out so much that I don't remember like how I felt the first time, like afterwards. I was just like, I want to do that.
I want to do that, please. Where were you in terms of training when you first saw that? I mean, where were you in terms of career? So it would have been 2015-ish? So where would you have been?
I already graduated.
Because you'd have been done by then, wouldn't you? Yeah.
I already graduated, like, you know, training. I was just waiting for a storyline. Because the thing is, like, when they were bringing me up, because I'm the first woman, right? So mm-hmm. they were kind of having a hard time how to include me into the current roster. They felt bad that they kept me like hidden and like waiting for another woman, but then like the girl that was supposed to you know, graduate with me and have the first women's match with me was just like, you know, she had to go away, like her family didn't like her bit. And we made up this angle that I was like a, you know, I was a ring announcer. I was actually a ring announcer for one of the shows. That was like terrifying. And then for the next show, I basically was like the backstage interviewer. And then that's where it started. Like, there was this one guy, this one like misogynistic wrestler that was like, you know, Crystal, you should just make me savage, blah, blah, blah. You know, those type of comments. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, me have to go in there like, hey, can't do this. And then that's when I debuted. And then so like I was already like a graduate at this point, but like I wasn't being booked for any matches because I was still like in that, you know, awkward point that they couldn't do anything for me until they found like a more appropriate storyline for me to debut. But yeah, I was training-ish.
So when it comes to sort of like you're waiting in the wings to debut because they can't find a female performer for you, when the conversation started of just saying them saying, why don't we just put Crystal in with the men and let's just do, what was the reaction to that from the locker room? Because sometimes in some locker rooms that kind of thing is quite divisive, like the intergender matches. But how did the locker room in the promotion take that?
There were some guys who were against it, just because like they felt weird, like, you know, hitting a woman. But then a lot of them were like so used to me because I used to train with the guys all the time and, you know, in boot camp or like training. I've crossed hands with almost everyone back then. Like no matter guy or girl, I was just like, I want to wrestle. So most of the locker room was like, yes, finally you're gonna debut, congrats. They weren't like apprehensive about it. They weren't like, I don't want her to debut. I don't want to have a match with her. You know, they were just like, you're finally getting it. You deserved it. You know, you've been training for like a year or so, more than a year or so. And they were just like excited for me too, just because like I finally have that time to, you know, show the audience what I've been training for.
And how did the audience react to it? I feel like them bringing you in as an announcer and then as an interviewer, they've got to know you. Were they receptive in the right way when you finally debuted and started battering the men?
Yeah. I think like a part of the audience were freaking out just because they're like, oh, finally a girl. And she's not like a, you know, ring girl or like not a manager, an actual female wrestler. So like the audience were just like cheering. And then the following time that I got booked, they were like, oh my gosh, Crystal, we're finally have a girl in PWR in Philippine wrestling and we're so excited, you know, we'll cheer for you. And then like some of the friends that I have now were like, one of like, I think there's this one guy who is like, I play games with him now and like we're friends, and like he was one of the guys that, you know, started cheering me on since like 2016 when I debuted. So like I'm so thankful for the fans back then, like back in 2016, because most of them are still here, like, you know, cheering me on and like, you know, making posts about me or even like making, you know, posters during the shows. They're still there every time I have a match. And I'm just like, I'm so thankful because, you know, I'm not gonna sugarcoat this. Like, there would be times that wrestling is tough. There would be times that your body would be like, oh, there would be like politics involved sometimes. I think that's like almost any company or like everywhere, there's always politics and like, you know, gossip. I just didn't mind it at all because I have like a clear view that I just want to wrestle. I just want to go places and wrestle. You know, that's my goal. And I didn't mind all the bad stuff. But there would be times that it just accumulates, like the bad stuff just accumulates. You're tired, you're exhausted. There's like politics and backstabbing involved. And there would be times that I'm down. And then these fans would like, randomly, like after like a show or a match, they would come up to me. If I'm like selling merch, they would come up to me, like they would give me a letter or like a sketch, and they would be like, Crystal, this is for you. And then like I would read the letter and I'm just like, ah, all my worries, ah. And like a lot of their letters and sketches are still here with me, so I keep them all. So I'm so thankful.
Is there one in particular, like a piece of fan mail, a sketch, a letter that has stayed with you that has special meaning?
The there's this one letter that I still have, and I think I'm just not gonna mention his name, but one of the fans said, like, I said something once in an, I don't remember the exact the words anymore, but in the letter it said, like, I said something once in an interview that helped him push through his difficult days. Because, you know, like, to me, I'm not trying to tug on anyone's, like, hearts, but apparently it tugged onto his heart and it gave him, like, a bit of a push that, you know, helped him throughout his dark days. And I'm just like, wow, I'm such a face.
Such a face, me. I'm such a. But there's some truth to that, because you've yeah. said in this in our chat so far today, like, you've had those dark days and you've been in those rough places, and all you're doing is going out there and finding your truth, and finding your way. And it's funny how in doing that, in simply going out and finding your way, you kind of help other people who are lost as well.
Yeah, like, that's why
you don't quite know what the destination amazing. Is either, but you just sort of you pick them up along the way.
Yeah, it is honestly so, like, heartwarming, just because, like, I'm not thinking about, like, hey, you know, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna melt everyone's hearts, I'm gonna make them, you know, happy, I'm gonna, you know, be a positive influence. I never really did that. I was just like, I'm gonna do me. And if doing me would also inspire someone or help someone out, that'd be great.
That's all. That's all we can ask. That is all we can ask. Talk to me about the scene. I know you've been everywhere, and I do want to talk about a bit more of your world travels. But just sort of to round this bit off, like, talk to me a bit about the scene in the Philippines now, like the wrestling scene there. You when you joined, you were the only girl. You know, still very much an island unto yourself. But have you seen that scene grow since you got into it? And if so, how has it changed, and what's to come for it, do you think?
So back then in 20, okay, so the PWR was established basically 2012. They started out as a, like, Facebook group of guys just, like, freaking out about, you know, wrestling stuff, and they would, like, cut promos against each other, and then they were like, why don't we start this as an actual thing? Like, why don't we start our own wrestling promotion? So then they did. And then 2013 came in, they had their first show, I started training. So basically it was there from, like, almost the beginning, you know? And then there was just, like, one company. And now there's, like, three wrestling promotions here in the Philippines. And, like, I think the promotions also have, like, the other promotions also have girls in them. But at least the company that I'm with are... PWR, I've helped train, I think, like, 10 women so far. But then, like, some of them quit just because work, studies, family, which are, like, all understandable things. But now I do, like, for sure, there's, like, there's Jay Sarah, there's Gemerlin, there's, like, Robin, there's Nina, and then there's me. Like, there's five of us on the main roster in PWR now, like, five women, and there's also some girls in training, which they say to me that the reason why I'm one of the founding, like, you know, pillars of PWR, like, Philippine wrestling, is because I showed, like, the media or the wrestling scene here in the Philippines that a woman can stand in the ring alongside, you know, fighting, not even, like, as a manager or as an announcer or whatever, it as another wrestler in the ring. So I've received, like, messages for some some girls that they kept saying, like, when I turn 18, I'll join PWR, I wanted to be trained under you. And I'm just like, okay, turn 18 already, I'm not getting any younger.
What a piece of, when you get messages like that from people who want to following in your footsteps and in the Philippines, what are some of the bits of guidance that you give to them?
For the ones like, you know, wanting to join, yeah. I always just keep telling them, like, be active. Like, it doesn't matter what sport or if it's just working out, you know, just be active, because it really does help with, like, the wrestling of it. Because, like, before joining wrestling, like we've said, like, I've had years of experience of, like, sports. And basically, like, you know, the striking background from taekwondo, the cheerleading, the high flying from cheerleading, the flexibility from the ballet, everything just accumulated into the wrestling. And I think that's why it was easier for me to, like, you know, start training or, like, start having, I didn't have as much problems because I wasn't, like, I didn't need to work on my kicks per se. They didn't really look awkward because, you know, I kick a lot in taekwondo. So, you know, I didn't, because, like, there would be some guys who would join wrestling because they just love it, but they never really had, like, any athletic background. You know, they would be, like, gamer boys or, like, comic book boys. They just wanted to be a wrestler because it's been, like, their childhood dream. But they didn't have really any athletic background, so that's what, like, that was hard for them. So that now, whenever someone asks me, like, even if it's a girl or even if it's a guy, like, what should I do? Like, I want to start wrestling as well. I'm just like, you can start a sport. You can work out. You know, you can have, like, MMA training or, like, judo or whatever. Just be active. Like, try out the martial art, even if you're... Because there are some, you know, guys and girls who would message me, like, they're still not 18. Because we only accept, like, 18 and above here in the Philippines. They're still not 18. So, like, you know, it's just 2 more years. You could just, you know, do some boxing on the side or some, you know, something martial artsy or active. Or maybe even parkour, because some guys do that. I wouldn't suggest the parkour because that's kind of technically dangerous. But if you even want to, like, do, like, gymnastics, that would be great. Because at least you have, like, tumbling inside. Because those are, like, the things that you can incorporate with wrestling throughout the time. Because, like, if you had, like, martial arts background, you might be, like, a great striker inside the ring, you know? If you had, like, MMA, you might have, like, good grappling inside the ring, you know? That could lead up into, in the future, you might have, like, a grappling finish or, like, a submission. So, like, whenever someone says, like, hey, I can't join yet, but I want to do something, I always tell them, like, be active, start a sport or something. Even if it's not a sport, just work out at home, start working out. It's still different when your body's conditioned already than, you know, wrestling and then conditioning at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good bit of guidance, because, as you say, you can pull from a lot of different sports to aid you in wrestling, as you've proven as well. Which came first for you? Was it the short tour you did of Japan, sort of the appetite whetter of the Japanese tour, mm-hmm. or the tryout for WWE in Shanghai?
WWE.
The WWE one. So, like, what's the process with that then? Was it an open tryout, or did you get invited?
No. I got invited.
So talk me through that, because that must have been a bit of a strange moment for somebody who watched it growing up, and then all of a sudden, here's a letter, come and see us.
Well, it's like me with WWE is like a long story. Back in 2017, like, WWE went to, like, Southeast Asia. They toured Southeast Asia throughout, like, you know, the Southeast Asian promotions. And they were basically scouting. And then when they went to the Philippines, they scouted me. They gave me, like, a card. Hey, email us your stuff. And I was like, That was me. And then, you know, a year later, I actually got invited to the Mae Young Classic. I was supposed to join the Mae Young Classic.
Wow.
Yeah, but visa.
Ah, the old friend. Oh no.
Yeah, you don't know how depressed I was. I was just like, it's almost here. I almost got it.
Oh, bless
I was
you.
There. I was the thing is I felt bad because they even announced it on the article. And then when I told them that my visa got declined, they had to pull the article out. And the thing was, I wasn't even like a backup. I was supposed to be in it. Like, they published an article about all the females that are joining. And I was just like, I almost set foot in the E, you know, I will set foot in the E. And then another year passes by. They would always be in contact with me, like via email. But another year passes by, they were like, hey, Crystal, we're going to be holding like tryouts in Shanghai. Please join. Make sure you get the visa this time, please. Like, I'm the executive that was contacting me, like, put that in the email. Make sure you get the visa this time. I was like, okay, sir. And then when I got, like, it was like still like 5 months ahead of time. But yeah, I started my visa like that right away. Like, I gathered all the, you know, the paperwork for it. And then I was just like, here, I need to go to Shanghai. Please, this summer, please.
So, and this time it happened, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean,
so,
hang on, I interrupted you.
Like, so I, like, there were like three people from the Philippines got invited. Three people from like Thailand, three from Singapore got invited as well. And, you know, fortunately, I'm one of those three from the Philippines, and like two of my good friends from, you know, back then, we were all part of PWR. We basically, like, they say, like, we were like the foundations of PWR just because, like, we've been there the longest, or we've been there from like almost since the beginning of PWR. So yeah, we went to the tryout. We were like, hella tired. We were like, this is wrestling, this is WWE, oh my god, I'm gonna die. Because like,
because they work you, don't like, they put you through your paces.
Yeah, they're just like, wow, they just grind you out. There would be like wrestling training and then like cardio and then wrestling and then cardio and then workout and then weights, and you're just like, that all happens within like, you know, like 7 hours. We would have like an hour for lunch, but then that would be like, and at the end of the day, would be some of the guys would be like, you know, Crystal, let's go out and have dinner, and I'm just like, I don't wanna.
For you, they really, so they, was it one of the toughest sort of tryout workouts that you'd ever done? To that
probably
point?
Like the hardest workout. Like, I've never felt my body burn that much ever before.
Jeez.
Like, me telling you this, because I went to you know, the artistic stuff, the ballet, I went to like the martial arts, the taekwondo, I went to like the competitive stuff, the cheerleading. Like, none of them burned my body this much as WWE. Because like, it would be like weight training and then cardio and then wrestling. And that's like a circuit of theirs. And then they do like two of those in a day. And then like lunch. And then sometimes there would be like an outdoors thing. And you're just like, ah!
But it's all just to see, like, it's to make sure that like your stamina is tip top, and also just to kind of really test who really kind of wants to be there. And so that you go through the trial, everything hurts. You push on through it. How are things currently with you in WWE? Where was it left?
I don't know.
Oh, no. That's not a good answer.
No, but the thing is, like, WWE has always somehow kept tabs on me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know, but apparently they did. From, like, when they scouted me the first time. So, they have, you know, they have their eyes on me, I guess. So, I'm really thankful that they do, and I just want to keep proving to them that I do belong in the ring. Like, even if it's not WWE, even if it's not AEW, even if it's not whatever. I'm not going to wait around for them to contact me. I'm just going to do my best to get out there and wrestle. That's why I'm learning Japanese, so I can go to Japan and then I can wrestle in Japan. And then maybe get into the, you know, promotion there, and then maybe, yeah. Well, also because I'm friends with Riho and Sakura-san, so maybe, you know, some.
Maybe. So you think there might be a little in there with AEW perhaps to go and do some stuff there? Maybe.
I don't know. I have nothing planned, but right now, because the pandemic is really stopping me from traveling that much.
Mm.
So the only thing I could do like the last, you know, 2 years was like study Japanese, you know, so that if I do get to Japan, it'd be easier for me to communicate, because I'm not like, you know, saying excuses, but, you know, as a foreigner and like going to like Japan, making matches was kind of a bit complicated because, you know, there's a language barrier and you're just like, move, roll. You drop kick me. That's how we would plan matches. It wouldn't be like, you know, hey, you want to do this, you want to do that, you want to do this. You know how we would normally plan, like wrestlers plan a match. But then they would just be like, you move, kick, drop kick. And I'm just like, okay. So, you know, I wanted to learn Japanese, not just because I love the Japanese culture, also maybe in the prospects of like wrestling in Japan.
I think after your, I say you had a mini tour there, didn't you?
Yeah, like a 2 week thing, 2-3 week thing.
What was one of the things that you noticed about the culture of wrestling in Japan compared to the culture of wrestling in the Philippines?
Japan is very straightforward.
Yeah.
In terms of it's a match.
Mm.
You know, they don't really like, I mean, they would call on to the audience, there would be some participation, but it wouldn't be as much as entertaining. Because in the one in the Philippines, we do take a lot from their, you know, entertainment side.
Mm-hmm.
We have some like comedic wrestlers, we have some like, you know, we had some funny personalities in the ring. Like we would have like even like, you know, those insane type of guys in the ring, and they would all just like, they would love interacting with the audience so much. I'm not saying that in Japan they don't interact with the audience, but not as much in Philippine wrestling, because in Philippine wrestling we love to irk the audience. You're just like, if you're a heel, you're just like, you know, we all do all that, we do the lip service and stuff like that. But then if we're face, you're just like, let's go, and then, you know, you high five everyone. You know, we really do try to interact with our crowd so much, because, you know, without the crowd, without their support, we wouldn't be able to keep it going. But with the same with Japan is because they're very, you know, Japan's wrestling is quite different. They're very like athletic, they're very, you know, technical about it, they have their own techniques and stuff like that. So it's like a very showmanship, or like a show basically, just to showcase their own like athletic background, or like their martial arts skill, all their training that they've done. So like, let's think about it this way. Like, Japan is more sports in the sports entertainment, and the Philippines is like more entertainment in the sports entertainment.
With you.
Makes more sense?
I'm with you. There's one leans more into the other than the other. I'm with you. I get that a lot. When it comes to, again, the reason that we're talking today is the Netflix documentary Midnight Asia, which was showcased the wrestling scene in the Philippines wonderfully for a short while on the Manila episode. What's some of the reaction that you've had since that documentary came out? Have you had
a lot
much?
Of congrats?
Yeah,
there was a lot of congrats. There was also a lot of like new followers. After that, you know, some guys would follow me on Instagram, and they would message me. Like, the thing is, I appreciate it all. You know, I love the support and everything. But like, the thing is, like, you know, like I think everyone has like a private Facebook. You know.
Yeah.
or like a just something private, like a private social media thing. The thing is, I've always like kept my private, my Facebook private, because that's for me and my friends, or like, me, my family as well.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there'd be some guys, because like my whole name is basically posted on that Netflix episode, right?
Yes.
So you know, they would search it up on the Facebook and they would try to like message requests, and like I've gotten so many friend requests. The thing is, I'm not trying to like disrespectful of anything, but like, this is my private Facebook. These are like for the people I have met, or like for my family, or like my all the titos and titas, or like the godfathers and godmothers that I have, or even cousins. But yeah, you know, there's like a lot of good things, because I've gotten like a bunch of like interviews and like opportunities because of the Netflix thing. But also I've gotten like some guys who, you know, you try to go into the DMs, and I'm just like not about that life right now.
Oh, I just it's horrible that it comes. It's horrible for two things. It's horrible because it comes with the territory, and it shouldn't.
Yeah,
absolutely shouldn't. And also it's horrible because bless you, Crystal, you have to sit here and explain why you don't want to add a bunch of randoms on Facebook, like, and almost in an apologetic manner. It's like, no, it's your Facebook. Add who you like.
Yeah.
Keep it shut. You don't owe flipping John Thompson from London an explanation as to why you won't be his friend on Facebook. You don't, you know?
Yeah, I know, but like there is.
This is coming from somebody, by the way, who sent you a DM on Instagram to talk to you. But I'm aware that it was for a very different reason to what he's doing.
No, but like, you know, I understand, because we're here right now talking through Zoom, and you know, being the whole like podcasting. But like, there are some guys who like, you're beautiful on Instagram, and I'm just like, thank you, but then I'm not gonna accept that message request. Or like, you know, messages me on like my Facebook and says like, hey, smiley face, and I'm just like, nah.
What? I for me as a guy, when you see people doing that, I just think, what's the end game here? What is the best possible reaction? Like, you put hey, you're beautiful, and they go, oh, I will drop everything and marry you immediately. Like, I don't know what they're expecting to happen.
The thing is, like, if it's like someone here from the Philippines or someone in Asia, like I would understand, because like they could, you know, if ever I do reply, like I would be able to like meet up with them or whatever. But like if it's someone from like, you know, in the Western part of the world, not that I have anything against like Westerners, but like, hey, you're beautiful, you know, I'm just like, what do you want?
Sadly, it's apparent. But it's your best advice. Yeah, the best thing you do is just to block it and shut it out.
Yeah.
But what a shame that we live in a society where you have to explain away, look, I'm not replying because of this. Because it's once you put yourself out there, I feel like everybody kind of feels like they own a piece of you.
Yeah.
And they don't. That's not how, you know, it's not fair to think of it that way. You know, just because I've seen you on the telly, therefore you must talk to me. Like,
yeah.
No, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, because like, the thing is, I, as a wrestler, I do put my body out there. So like, I wear like, you know, wrestling gears, like little clothing. So like some guys is just like, oh, you're so sexy, look at that butt, you know? And I'm just like, I'm not doing this for you, you know? I'm wearing this like tiny piece of clothing because I don't want to get it snagged anywhere. Because like when you're wrestling in there and you're wearing like a loose fitted shirt or like something that covers you entirely, it kind of snags on places. Like if you know, you get into headlock, you're gonna get snagged. You know, it's just not a good look. So like, tighter gear would be better, just because it's smoother, you flow through the air better, you run fast. Not that you run faster, but it feels like you're running faster. Because, you know, nothing's going against the wind.
Yeah.
Like when you're running inside the ring. So, yeah.
But again, it's the ring attire that you put on yourself. So you shouldn't have to explain it. But it's a shame that we do. I tell you what, Crystal. Right, so people are going to hear this, and they're going to hear this through Cultaholic. And they're going to be discovering your wonderful self for the very first time. If you get any messages that are creepy, inappropriate, and they happen to have Cultaholic as somebody they follow, send them my way. I will have a stern word.
Oh, my God. Thank you
so much. If they look as if they are connected to Cultaholic in any way, send them my way, and I'll sort that out for you. Honestly, it won't stand for it.
Thank you.
And if you're listening to this, don't even think about sending anything creepy to me or to Crystal mainly. I mean, I get creepy messages, that's fine. But Crystal, don't send any to. If you do, we'll have words. Right, sorted. Your third and final match, Crystal, before we let you go. We had your belter with Amy Sakura-san. We had Bayley versus Sasha Banks from TakeOver Brooklyn. What would you like your third and final one to be?
That's hard.
It's tough, isn't it? It's tough picking three.
The thing is, maybe that Okada and Tanahashi?
Oh.
One of those matches. Maybe the 2017 or 2018.
Oh, okay. So, I'm trying to think. Did Tanahashi win the 17 one?
I think this was the time that they were just bashing each other.
Clattering each other.
Yeah. And Tanahashi wouldn't give up at all, you know? I got teary-eyed from one of those matches because I was just like, give up already. Your face.
Was there a particular moment that you felt like when you started welling up? Was it a particular move or a particular incident in the ring that you felt yourself getting upset over?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I do I have wrestler's memories now because I do have I've planned matches in my head. I've done matches, so matches kind of get convoluted, but there was this one moment. I think Okada hit his clothesline.
Yeah,
this move.
The Rainmaker.
And then the Rainmaker. Yeah, there you go. He hit the clothesline. I think he pinned Tanahashi. I think Tanahashi kicked out of it, and then he was holding onto his arm.
So even though he got the two and a half, Okada still had the arm. So Okada was able to slowly pull him back up.
I think Tanahashi was really, really fighting. But there was a moment that they held, Tanahashi held Okada's arm or something like that. I keep forgetting which year this was, but there was that moment that even though Tanahashi was just so beaten down, he didn't give up. That wasn't an easy win for anyone, any of those two in the ring. It's just there was a moment that I was just you know how it kept getting high and high and high, and I'm just I just want it to be over. My heart can't take this anymore. I'm just oh my God. Because it kept giving me all the false finishes and everything like that. There would be a pin and maybe kick out and pin and another kick out. I was just I can't take this anymore. Just finish it already. Oh my God, my heart.
But isn't it great though? Even though you're going through, you've gone through the process and now you are a professional wrestler and you can still watch that and you can still have your disbelief suspended. And I love that wrestling can still do that. As somebody watching this with the eyes of a pro wrestler, is there stuff that you see in that match and you think, oh, I like that. I'm going to write that down and use that myself. Is there anything that maybe you borrow or are inspired by in that match that you've used in your work?
I would definitely say that I've been inspired by it. I've had David and Goliath matches before.
Mm.
And I still remember Tanahashi, there was that moment that he held on to Okada, not giving up. I think it was me facing Desiderata Desiderata is 6 foot, and I'm just hey, I'm 5'3" and a half. So it was a real, I don't think she was six. She might have been 5'11", almost six, basically. Her moveset was power moves. Also because she has MMA background. She fall away slam. She would suplex me, vertical suplex me, all the suplexes in the world, German and all that. And then she was just like, you know, she was holding my hair, and this was like nearly at the end of the match. She was holding my hair and like talking smack about me. And I'm just like, I look up at her and just like grab her, like as if just that moment. And I feel like, I hope that the audience would see that moment as me, even though I'm beaten up, like I've been swung around, like I'm not giving up, you know, I'm still crawling, you know. And that was like one of the moments that I took from like the Okada Tanahashi like match, that I was just like, I do this too.
She's beaten up, but she's going to keep on going, and she's going to keep on going. And we're excited to see where you keep on going to. Genuinely, this has been really lovely to chat to you. I'm really glad that I watched Netflix the other night with the good lady, because that's how we found you. And I thought one thing I really want to do is make sure that we shine a light on the wrestling world that maybe criminally in our side of the world here in the UK doesn't get enough love. And I want to make a change to that. But Crystal, thank you for doing it and being a force for good. Where can people go now? Obviously, Facebook, your personal Facebook aside, and if you're listening, stop it. Don't. Is there somewhere people can go if they want to keep up to date with what you're up to and where they can buy merch and stuff like that? Where can they go?
My main social media account will be at I'm Vernice. Well, that's where you messaged me. Well, the thing is, like, that used to be my like personal Instagram, but then like just turned into the public one. I didn't care anymore, because also my name is plastered on there anyways on the Netflix, so you know, might as well use. And then like if you search I'm Vernice, I do have links there. I do have my Twitch. I've started my Twitch recently, so I'm streaming. But then I'm getting back into wrestling, actually. I have a match this on the May 1st. And then hopefully it's going to keep going on. And then, you know, hopefully keeps going on into another country. And but yeah, follow me at I'm Vernice on Instagram. And that's where everything there is going to be connected anyways. So.
Well, by the time this goes out, your first match will have happened, because it's going on the Wednesday after, annoyingly. Who's your opponent for Wednesday for the first?
His name is Robin Sane.
Robin Sane. Now, is this a familiar foe, or is this a new one?
He's a friend, but then now he's a foe. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen? The thing is, like, we've known each other for years in the wrestling scene, but we haven't really, like, touched before. So this is our first time together in the ring. So hopefully some, you know, fun moments will happen.
Good friends, better enemies. You can keep up to date with Crystal on I'm Vernice on Instagram or on Twitch as well. You can come for the wrestling talk and you can stay for Genshin Impact if you follow Vernice on Twitch. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And it's happened now, because time is weird. Best of luck / I'm sure it went well on May the 1st for you, Crystal.
Thank you so much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.